Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Isn't eating plants also violent? They have emotions too. So then what can we eat? It would be nice if we could live on air. It would be nice if we could tread through life, however many years we have, without ever causing pain or suffering, let alone death, to anyone. It would be so wonderful if we never had to kill anything or harm anything. Unfortunately, we can't live on air. Unfortunately, every day we are killing bacteria within ourselves. Anytime you ever take an antibiotic, you're killing millions and millions and millions of little living bacteria within yourself. Unfortunately, every time we step on the grass, inevitably, we're killing something. Smaller than the bunny rabbit or the squirrel that we can see are all kinds of tiny, tiny little beings that live in the grass. The tragedy is that in order to live, there is an impact. On one end of the spectrum are people, for example, like the Jain community, who have made a decision. Not only do they not eat animals, but they don't eat any root vegetables. So they won't eat potatoes, they won't eat carrots, they won't eat anything that, in pulling it up from the earth, actually causes such a disturbance to the earth that innumerable little insects are injured. On the other end is the super size me community of, you know, bacon for breakfast and hamburgers for lunch and dinner. Most of us fall somewhere in between. But the question is actually very sincere and beautiful, and I want to look at it deeply for a minute. The point of our lives is about how can we create as much life, as much joy, as much peace as possible. Since we can't live on air, we have to eat something. Vegetables, fruits, particularly things that the earth gives up to us. I mean, every time you eat an apple, you're not hacking down the whole tree and everything that lives in it. You're getting what Mother Earth has given. Now, yes, as the question asked, yes, they actually do have feelings. It's not a silly question. Science has shown. They've put electrodes up against plants and have shown that they absolutely do respond to different tones of voices. If you say to a plant, I'm going to kill you, amazingly, the plant actually responds in a way that can be picked up by a meter. However, that doesn't mean that it justifies the violence that eating meat is. And that's usually where these questions come up. The questions rarely come up from someone who says, I'm going to learn to live on air and sunshine because eating vegetables causes too much damage. The question usually comes up from people of, well, why do I have to be a vegetarian? I mean, the plants feel also, so what's the difference? And this is the sort of justification and rationalization that is an inherent part of our human existence. And it's really important to look at it and to call it what it is and to see it. It's the exact same thing that anyone who's ever been on a diet has experienced when, okay, you start a new diet, then somehow, whatever, you eat a cookie. But then what happens? After we eat the cookie, what happens? Oh, well, I mean, I've ruined my diet anyway. I might as well eat the whole bag. Like, let's order a pizza now because I've ruined my diet. And oddly enough, there actually seems to be some sort of a rationale there because so many of us do it. Objectively, though, we all understand, on a serious note, that there's a very big difference. Even if all you're doing is counting calories, there's a very big difference between one cookie and a bag of cookies and a pizza. And in the same way, just because plants have a response, an electrical response to tones of voices, to different sounds, we cannot use that piece of information, like the cookie we ate, to justify the carnage that the meat industry creates. Let's look at it a different way for a moment. Let's say even for a moment that a cucumber had exactly the same emotional state, exactly the same neurological response to a cow. We all know it's not true. But let's just assume for a moment it did, just for the sake of argument. Eating the cucumber is only violent to the cucumber. Eating the cow is not only violent to the cow. Eating the cow is violent to our human brothers and sisters with whom we share this planet. Eating the cow is violent to every farmer whose field is desiccated and who's on the verge of committing suicide because he has no harvest and he can't feed his family. Eating the cow is violent to our water supply, to our air supply, to every single person on earth who lives on the edge of water that is rising with climate change. The meat industry is the single greatest contributor to climate change. This is by a UN report. This is not Keeb Sadhvi says. This is UN report. The single greatest contributor to climate change is the livestock industry. I'm not going to take up all our time tonight to go into it, But whether we look at carbon dioxide, whether we look at methane, whether we look at deforestation, whether we look at water usage, whether we look at energy usage, the meat industry is the single largest culprit. It also, and this is where I was talking about violence, it also is pulling food out of the mouths of tens of thousands of children who are starving to death every day. We produce enough food to feed more than 10 billion people. And yet, over a billion people sleep hungry every night. Tens of thousands of children are dying of starvation each day. And the reason for that is that the food that we produce, instead of being used to feed people, is being cycled to feed the animals who become the hamburgers and the hot dogs and the chicken McNuggets. It takes, I'll only give you one statistic, I promise. It takes 16 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of beef. 16 pounds of rice, wheat, soy, corn. You feed it to the cow. Cow eats and eats and eats for years. A lot of it's digested. It doesn't all turn into meat. At the end of the day, pound by pound, for every 16 pounds of grain you put into that cow, you end up with a pound of beef. But to make rice, to make bread, to make pasta, pound for pound. So what that means is every single time I choose to eat meat, I am literally saying, I deserve to eat for 15 other people. Let them go to hell. Let them starve. Let them die. I deserve their food. That is a lot more violent than eating a cucumber. I'm not denying the research that shows that they also have consciousness, which is beautiful. That's what we talk about in here every night. Isha vasya midam sarvam, yat kincha jagatyam jagat. Everything in the universe is pervaded by the divine. Even cucumbers, even lettuce, even spinach. But that doesn't mean that by any scale, any standard, any religion, any path, any value system that is worth anything, that you could compare starving people to the electrical response that a cucumber experiences. Again, though, the last point to mention about this is, because everything is interconnected and because there's consciousness in everything, this is why we only take what's needed. Just because a cucumber is lower on the totem pole of consciousness than our starving brothers or sisters doesn't mean I eat more than I need. Wherever we're eating on that chain, wherever we're shopping on that chain, it's not just what we're eating, whatever we're wearing on that chain, it needs to be as nonviolent as possible. We've spoken a lot over the last few days about ahimsa and nonviolence. So as low on the chain as possible. When you go camping in America in the national parks, they've got signs as you go through the ranger stations that say, take only memories and leave only footprints. And if we can think about our life on earth like that, obviously here we'd like to leave more than footprints in terms of inspiration, in terms of joy, in terms of peace. But what we take should be as close to just memories as possible.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
This report is not one that the UN publicized. It's available. You can download it online. You can find it. It's called Livestock's Long Shadow. But it was not something that got a lot of media attention or any, because the meat and dairy lobby is such a powerful lobby that they actually were able to squash it. However, each of us has a voice. And these days, you know, we moan and bemoan what social media has done to our lives. And yeah, there's a lot of cons to the social media in terms of how much of our day gets sapped, in terms of how many more pieces there are that just keep vying for our attention. New beeps, new blips, new whatnots. But it's probably the most powerful tool that the general public has ever had in its hand. And if we can use it like that, instead of just a way to zone out, instead of just a way to be distracted, or instead of just a way to connect with friends, it's an incredibly powerful vehicle. And every one of us, I mean, some of us may have more ability. If you teach in school, if you've got anything to do with school districts, if you've got anything to do with the media, if you've got anything to do with people who are working for environmental protection, I mean, I'll give you one example. I was at the United Nations a couple of weeks ago during the General Assembly week, and there was an event on world hunger. And I was there, and they had representation from different religions, and they had representation from the World Hunger Project and the UN's Hunger Organization. No one, in a two-hour event mentioned vegetarianism. And I said to the woman sitting next to me, who's actually a beautiful woman, a very, very awake woman, a dear friend of mine, and I said, how is it possible that no one has mentioned vegetarianism in a program dedicated to world hunger? And she said, well, the religious representatives, it was really up to them what they were going to use their 2 minutes on. And I said, no, I don't mean from a religious perspective. I mean from a hunger perspective. And this is a brilliant woman, an incredibly well-educated, well-informed, I mean, a hero of mine in many ways. And she had no idea. I sat there and gave her a few statistics. She had no idea. If we can get this out, which we can, each of us in our own ways. I mean, it's like, okay, sitting there in that night, I was able to bring about a little shift. Whatever opportunities we have, wherever we are, we have to talk about it. The issue is people don't like to talk about it. We want to be good people. We want to be spiritual people. We want to do the right thing. But we want to be able to do it in 15 minutes a day without changing our lifestyles. I can't tell you how many people come into these satsangs and ask some variety of, what's the bare minimum I have to do every day? And that, sadly, is really what we're looking for. What do I have to do? How many breathing exercises? How many asanas? How many rounds of chanting my mantra do I have to do so that I can walk out and give myself the spiritual stamp? And this is sadly what it's become for so many people. We don't want to change our lifestyles. I want to keep up my shopping therapy. I want to still have leather car seats. I want to still eat whatever I want to eat. I want to buy whatever I buy. I don't want my taxes to be raised. I want to keep up everything and be able to feel good about myself at the same time. And unfortunately, if you're really honest, it's very difficult to do that. But a little bit of inner uncomfortableness about what we ate or what we bought or is actually the stuff that catalyzes us to make a different decision next time. And that's what's so important. So let yourself be a little uncomfortable, both in your own life as well as in places where we're quiet. And then let us not be quiet about it. And it doesn't mean being angry vegetarians. I mean, when I was a teenager, my friends used to call me a vegetarianist. I've since learned a somewhat gentler approach, but we need to talk about it. We need to spread the word. Not everybody's going to change. But even if people ate meat 90% of the time and they stopped 10% of the time, the sheer impact on the planet would be phenomenal. But as Pooja Swamiji always says, you know, quoting Gandhiji, we have to be the change we want. It's not just about ramming it down other people's throats. Can we be that change? Are we prepared to actually live spiritual lives 24 hours a day? And when we do that, it gives courage to other people to do that. And when we cut corners, it gives the message that, yeah, corners can be cut. And then just use whatever capacity you have to get the word out.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
How to overcome fears when it comes to connecting with others and oneself, facing your past versus dwelling in the past. Well, you can't overcome anything until you actually look at what it is. You can't overcome your fear until you know what is it I'm afraid of and why is it I'm afraid. What most of us are afraid of on the deepest, deepest core level is extinction. I mean, this is just Darwinism. This is just basic survivalism. Our core instinct is to survive. This is true whether we are a mosquito, whether we are an earthworm, or whether we are a person. The deepest fear we have is that we will die. If you take most of the things we're afraid of, you say, well, I'm afraid of that. Okay. Imagine it happens. Then what? Imagine that happens. Then what? In almost every case, you can actually walk people into the final then what, which is, I will die. Now, it's not always death of the physical body. Sometimes it is. I'm afraid of airplanes. Why? They may crash. Okay, they crash. Then what? Then I die. But we're also afraid of things like humiliation. Why should we be so afraid of humiliation? If you take people through that, why are you so afraid of being embarrassed? Why are you afraid of being humiliated? Because actually what it does is gives us the experience of ceasing to exist. Not on a physical level, but on a deep emotional level. And the reason that that happens is we have developed identities that are based on what other people say. Begins when we're in our mother's arms. Babies look at their mothers. The mothers look at them. They make eye contact. They smile. They love. These babies grow up feeling good about themselves. Look in our mother's eyes. She's upset. She's stressed. She's not making eye contact. Kids grow up feeling less than worthy. You also end up with all sorts of physical ailments, but I won't go there. Lack of love actually ends up having a lot of physical ramifications too, and medical ramifications. But just on a psychological, spiritual level for a moment, we literally live judging ourselves based on how people respond. If I tell a joke, okay, I'm going to give y'all a joke, and I tell it, and nobody laughs, something inside me is going to plummet. And that's because as we look at each other, we are constantly readjusting how we feel about ourselves. If you see someone and they greet you with this, we feel who we are changes. Wow, I must be someone wonderful. Look how excited that person is to see me. And if you go to see someone and they turn their head or they kind of give one of these looks, we fall inside. Now, intellectually, we may not even know that person. Or we may understand what their issue is, why they're a mess. Doesn't matter. We are constantly readjusting our sense of self based on how people look at us. Think of the last time you went to a party. You dress up, a party, a wedding, whatever it is, you dress up, and you go. No one looks at you. No one notices. No one comments on your new clothes. No one comments on your new hairstyle. No one says you look great. You come back feeling like, was there something wrong? You keep checking yourself in the mirror. Why is what? Thought I looked okay. There's something very, very deep within us that is getting cues of who we are from other people. And so our fear, our deepest fear, is that I will cease to exist. Physically, yes, but also energetically. And what this leads us to is a lifetime of being afraid to do things because, oh my God, what if I fail? And then you take people through it and you say, okay, so imagine you fail, then what? Then people will know I'm a failure. Okay, so people know you're a failure. Then what? Then they won't love me. Okay, then they won't love you. Then what? And slowly what you realize is, again, the final is, I will dissolve. We really all, on a very, very deep level, have the belief that somehow, if people don't love us, if they don't acknowledge us, we don't exist. Think about this new selfie craze. I mean, really, psychologically, it's fascinating. I have to find some time and do a little bit of research on the sheer number of people who actually die every year simply taking selfies. I mean, there must be a statistic out there, whether it's a ledge, a bridge, a hill, a mountain, whatever it is, just to get the right shot, how many people have fallen or gotten hit by a car, who knows? That's not the funny part. The funny part is we don't just take them. The selfie craze is not a craze that ends up just on each of our individual mobile phones. We take them, and then we post them. Now, here's what's interesting about selfies. Until these really dangerous sticks came out, in the picture, in the frame, because your arm just isn't that long, your face takes up about 90% of the frame. You only get 10% of the Eiffel Tower or the Grand Canyon or wherever you are. So it's not really a picture of the Grand Canyon or the Eiffel Tower. It's a picture of my face and some kind of rocks or steel or something behind me. And then we post it. And then what happens? We keep checking. How many people have liked it? How many people have commented on it? Oh my God, nobody commented, nobody liked. What happened? What's going on? I mean, it's really psychologically fascinating. Pictures of ourselves in indistinguishable random places because you can't see enough of the background that we're sharing with the rest of the world and then waiting to see, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? You like it? You like it? You love it now? And my enjoyment of my holiday has become 90% contingent upon the responses I get to the selfies that I've taken of myself on my holiday. If nobody likes or comments on our picture, we experience on some very deep level that we don't exist. We keep posting them to remind people. Not consciously, this is deeper than the conscious level, but the urge to do that is the urge to remember and to remind others that I exist. And the more responses I get, the more I exist. The fewer I get, the less I exist. And this is the root of a lot of what ails us. So when we talk about overcoming fears, we have to first break the myth that if you think I've made a fool of myself, I don't cease to exist.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation.
We develop courage to take risks because our awareness of our existence is no longer dependent on how people look at us or respond to us. If my well-being is contingent upon you, I'm going to live a life of fear. I'm going to live a life of playing it safe. I'm going to live a life of saying exactly what I think you want me to say. And I'm always going to be afraid. What if I didn't do it right? In order to overcome that, I have to ground my awareness in myself. We spoke last night about looking in the mirror. I have to know who I am. So that regardless of whether you think I'm the biggest fool that has ever walked the face of the earth, or whether you think I'm the greatest, it doesn't change how I feel about myself. And that's the only way to overcome that fear. The other quick piece of it is to recognize that the greatest tragedy is not failing, not being a fool. The greatest tragedy is never stepping up to the plate of your life, of looking back on your life and knowing that you never stepped up to the plate because you were afraid you were going to strike out. And they were going to laugh in the stands. That's the tragedy. That's something to be afraid of. I had this incredible gift, this incredible life, all these moments. And I didn't use them. The last piece to say on this is fear on the physical level. Because of course, so some of the fears are this, the psychological stuff, and some is the physical. I'm afraid to fly. What if the airplane crashes? I'm going to die. There's a great story about Swami Vivekananda, who was always teaching. His big motto and message was, stand up, be fearless. And so one day, a few of his disciples decided to test him. Is Swamiji really so fearless? And so he was in a lecture hall giving a lecture, and they dressed up like bandits, masks and dark clothes, and they come storming into the lecture hall with guns, fake guns, but they looked real. And they made a lot of noise. And everybody, of course, thought they were real and screamed and ran under the chairs and out the doors. Swamiji kept giving his lecture. Literally, unfazed. As not real, but nobody knew that at the time, bullets whizzed by his head. Finally, humiliated, they fell at his feet. They took off their masks. They apologized. And they said, but Swamiji, really, how is it possible? I mean, guns, like, not a little bit afraid? How did you do that? And he said, the bullet, which is meant to take my life, will take it even if I am surrounded by 100 guards. And the bullet, which is not meant to take my life, will not take it even if you fire at point blank. And if we can really take that level of faith into our hearts and move forward with that, that's the best antidote to fear. I'll leave you with a true story of our Pooja Swamiji, who was on an airplane. This was about 30 years ago. It was before I knew him. But this story was told to me by the man on the airplane with him, who was the chief editor of our Encyclopedia of Hinduism. And it was when Pooja Swamiji was in America and having just started the Encyclopedia of Hinduism project, and he was flying all over America, raising awareness about the culture, about the religion, helping people start temples. And he and Dr. Rao, who was the editor, were on a plane, and there was a horrible storm. They were flying over Chicago, which is a place renowned for horrible storms, and there was this horrible storm in Chicago. And lots, and you know, thunder, lightning outside, lots and lots of turbulence. And the pilot comes on and actually tells people to brace into crash position, that they may have to have a crash landing. The plane is plummeting, like, you know, 1,000 feet at a time. The overhead compartments open, luggage is pouring out, the plane is going like this. I mean, really, like, everybody thinks this plane is going to crash. People are screaming, crying, holding each other. Swamiji's writing on one of those yellow lined, you know, pads that they have in America. And he's just riding casually. And then the plane plummets another 1,000 feet. And everybody again, screaming, crying, holding each other, we're gonna die, we're gonna die. The pilot is saying, take crash positions. Swamiji's riding. Finally, Dr. Rao can't take it anymore, and he says to him, Swamiji, what are you writing? And Swamiji says, my speech. Now, first of all, Pooja Swamiji never, ever, ever, ever prepares a speech in advance. So the idea of writing a speech in and of itself is something that he doesn't do. And Dr. Rao says, Swamiji, there will be no speeches. You're going to die. We're all going to die. This plane is crashing. There are no speeches. So Swamiji says, well, see, here's the thing. I know I'm not going to die. And since everybody else thinks they're going to die, and you're telling me that this plane is going to go down and everybody else is going to die, it means I'm going to be the sole survivor of this plane crash. And when I'm the sole survivor of this plane crash, naturally they're all going to want to take my interview. And since my English isn't so good, and you're still sitting here next to me, I figured that I would use this opportunity to put some thoughts on paper so that if I had to ask you anything about how to say something in English, I could benefit from you while you were still alive next to me before the plane crashes. True story. This is what fearlessness looks like. True story. Now, most of us in our lives may not actually get there. That's a very special kind of fearlessness. But to be able to move through the world with faith, the faith that a child has in the mother's arms, the faith of knowing that it's not all on my shoulders. There's a knowledge, there's a wisdom, there's a plan, which means there's a planner. That's so much bigger, so much wiser than I am, who's taking care of it all. There's a beautiful line in the prayers that we chant every morning here that says, Tu akele nahi pyare, Ram tere saath mein. You're not alone. God is with you. And if we can really live that, knowing that we're really in the mother's arms, and of course, if you can live in that highest level where we began, of there is nothing but God, nothing like it. But if you find it difficult to live there, at least live with, I'm in God's arms. I'm being carried by God. And allow that faith to take over. And the faith will just replace the fear in your life.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation.
What is a guru? In the West, we make a big mistake, and we use the word, not just in the West, in India also, but primarily in the West. We take guru to just mean a teacher, someone who teaches us something. But the way to understand the difference between a guru and a teacher is, let's say that you really want to learn oceanography. You love the ocean, you're fascinated by the ocean, maybe you want to go into the ocean. So you find out the most brilliant oceanography professor. And you go and you take a class. You sit for 3 hours. The oceanography professor teaches you everything there is to know about life under the ocean, about the ocean itself, how long, how wide, how deep, what lives in the ocean, all of it. But at the end of the class, Your clothes are still dry. A guru not only teaches you things, but actually gives you the experience. If you were with an oceanography guru rather than a teacher, not only would you learn about the ocean, but your clothes would be dripping wet because you would have been dunked into the ocean. The word guru literally means the one who removes the darkness. So the question then becomes, well, what darkness is it in our lives that the guru removes? And the real darkness is the darkness of ignorance. All of that which we do in the West, in the Judeo-Christian tradition, we've got a very specific concept of sin and sinners and actions that are sins and the repercussions of sin. In the Indian spiritual tradition, in the Vedic tradition, there's not nearly such a sense of sin, it's a sense of ignorance. It's not that at the core of who you are, you're a sinner. At the core of who you are, you're divine. But what happens is, I don't realize that. I don't see my own divinity. I identify as the packaging. So I identify as the body. I identify as the physical body. I identify as where I've been, what's happened to me, my identity, my career, my skills, all of that. By identifying as this body, by having that ignorance, I commit acts. So let's say, for example, I'm sitting over here, I identify as this body, and I look over there and I think, God, she's got the most beautiful flower garland. Oh my God, I wish I had such a beautiful flower garland. Oh my God. Now, that experience of jealousy, of envy, of coveting, comes out of the ignorance of separation that says, she looks so beautiful with that flower garland on her. I, as this body, now feel very plain, feel very unbeautiful, and if I just could have such a beautiful flower garland, I too would feel more beautiful, more worthy, more valid. So out of ignorance. But then I go over and I snatch it from her. That act has its own karmic repercussion. I will now get what we call bad karma. But it's not that the universe has punished me. It's not that I've sinned. It's that out of ignorance, I've done an act. So the guru removes the ignorance. The guru is the light that shows you who you are, that says you are not this body. You're not your skills. You're not your identity. You're not what's happened to you. You're not your past. You're divine. And that's what the guru shows us. And the path never ends. It's on and on and on because with the light, there's nobody who ever says, all right, I've had enough light, you can turn it off now. Once you live in the light, you want to stay in the light. So the guru brings the light to the darkness and then the light's always on. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.